Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now for the second week in August. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and my guest this week is Scott Britton. Scott is the co-founder of the Cedar Root Folk School, and he's just a passionate observer of the natural world around us. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you.
So before we talk to Scott, let's hear this week's mystery sound. And we are doing something a little bit different again this week. The question is, what do these three calls have in common? So if you can identify the specific bird making the calls, that's great. But more important is, what are the bird calls communicating? So remember, the question is, what are those calls actually saying? Then as we look around our region for what people have seen lately, reports from the Center for Whale Research have documented the paucity of orcas in the Salish Sea this summer. I think that's something that those of us who have been out in the water have noticed, but it's now for real. The J-pod has been drifting in and out of the area, but mostly in fragments and in individual matrilines, not the whole pod. All the Ks have been in, but not all at once. The orcas are noticeably absent from their core summer habitat. Not coincidentally, this summer, like the summer of 2013, has seen record lows of returning salmon. On another note, on a recent hike up to the summit of Mount Townsend, Michelle Olson and Wendy Feltham reported spotting some beautiful late wildflowers. Abundant mountain death camas with its stalks of cream-colored flowers, bright blue Olympic harebells, and several endemic butterflies that were landing on many of the flowers. Overall, they described the summit as spectacular. One other thing, look up in the sky at night. August is the month for the Perseid meteor shower, and I understand from astronomers that it's expected to be much bigger and brighter this month than often. So now on to Scott. A few weeks ago on Nature Now, I talked with Scott about bird voices and bird language. If you missed the program, you can listen to the podcast on the KPTZ website. The idea of that program is that when you change your focus from simply identifying what species is making a particular sound or call to a broader listening and observing to better understand the behavioral setting, you can begin to understand what is going on in the habitat as a whole. We can see more wildlife and recognize baseline patterns of communication, and we can identify and understand disturbance in those patterns. And then, wonderfully, ultimately, understanding bird communications really does help us understand more about ourselves. That's how far we got the last time we talked. We mentioned that there are sort of techniques or practices to learn how to do this. So today we're going to talk about the practice of using a sit spot. So it's a continuation of our conversation with Scott. And we'll focus on just what is a sit spot, what one does, and why would one ever want to engage in such a thing as a sit spot. So the basic question, Scott, what is a sit spot?
A sit spot is simply an adopted piece of ground that you visit regularly where you drop your agenda to simply sit and watch and observe the world around you.
Okay, so what makes a good location for a sit spot?
Some are close that you can get to frequently. I've met people who have favorite spots out on Gray Wolf River drainage, and that's not really a great sit spot because you probably aren't going to
Get there regularly.
Get there regularly. Okay. So out your back door, on the back stoop, in local county park, on one of the many varied land trust properties around here.
But your backyard or front yard does count? Is
works
that works
great.
Too?
Yes. As long as it's within this universe, you are observing natural patterns.
So it sounds like the most important thing is somewhere to observe nature that's easy to get to that you'll actually go to regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Will you share where yours is?
Yeah, I sit next to a pond that's on our property that there's a lot of variety of life coming and going. Water in general brings life to a landscape. So I find the patterns unendingly fascinating there, and it's really close, and it's hard to make an excuse not to go
not
there.
Not to do that. Mm-hmm. Another basic question is, why do you do it, and why do you encourage others to make the practice of using a sit spot?
The overarching theme is for you to find a place to observe the world around you. Now, this ends up being a gateway and a reminder that we are alive on a miraculous spinning planet with a magma in the middle and spinning around a ball of fire. And sometimes when you remind people, it's heresy, but really that is you're taking the time to remember and take a break out of your life that we are here alive on a big, diverse, verdant planet.
So maybe one can think about it as a form of meditation in a way.
It is, aside from traditional Eastern meditations are looking inward, and this is much more similar to how you would imagine a red-tailed hawk behaving, is that
sort of looking outward.
You're looking outward and you're scanning the world around you for patterns.
Interesting.
And that's the name of the game. We have these buzzwords in this day and age of humans in the educational realm of lifelong learning, but you try to communicate that theory to a red-tailed hawk. Lifelong learning means life, and if you stop, you are lunch. And so this becomes a place to continue lifelong learning and looking for patterns and observing.
So would you share a story of experience that you had at your sit spot that maybe was especially meaningful to you or increased your understanding?
Well, the sit spot routine, it's a seesaw back and forth between going home and gathering information through field guides and utilizing journaling practices and going back out and observing. And at one point, I had a sit spot for 7 years straight that I visited weekly. And it's a whole amalgam of experiences that have shaped me. So to tease one out, I would have to say that I watched this individual, Buick's Wren, mom raising chicks that ended up getting eaten by a raccoon the first time around. And the second time that she had a second clutch, which was devastating to watch, but the second time that she had her clutch, I noticed that she started exiting her nest. It was a different nest location, but because I'm visiting the same spot weekly, I knew that it was the same individual. And she started leaving her nest only when there was rustling of wind, and she would flutter to the ground like a fallen leaf each time and go out and collect food for her young. And
how cool is that?
That second clutch made it, and whether that was a behavioral change or something that I just didn't pick up on the first
time.
That's
beautiful.
Yeah, it was
a beautiful
neat.
Thought,
it was
though.
Really
wow.
Neat.
So what do you actually do when you're at a sit spot?
You're searching for patterns. It's pattern recognition. And I start each of my sessions out just focusing on each of my senses and pushing them out as far as I can. I start with my hearing and listening in a 360-degree sphere around me and what's the quietest sound that I can locate, and then move through all of my senses in a similar fashion and ask the question to myself of what's happening here and what is this telling me, and searching for endless patterns that are around us.
Are there a set of questions that you're asking yourself?
Not aside from what is this telling me. When the layered patterns, it's the yellow jackets are always on the tin roof on the south side, and they like it really hot. And it's this quest for dropping any of our judgments about, ooh, I don't like spiders or yellow jackets or whatnot, and then the patterns emerge. And it's the same thing when we're in relationship with our human friends, that we watch that if there's genuine curiosity towards the natural world, the children who are around that pick up on that and are immersed in it as well. That's a pattern that's universal.
So when you're in your sit spot, how do you adjust your behavior so that whatever you're doing has kind of a minimal impact on what you're observing? So you have the sense that what you're observing is
what's happening.
What's happening is a more natural state rather than a human influence state.
I find the human influence fascinating because that's the mirror of the world looking back at you. So how you approach your observation area is as important to how you sit there and the behavior you have while you're there. And there's many times that I've entered my area in a very, okay, this is my time that I have to be timeless. I'm going to go to this spot. I have a half hour carved out, and I'm going to carve out a bit of timeless time. Yet I'm not quite there yet. And so I'm scattering creatures before I even gotten to my spot. And that mirror and that reflection, we can take that with us everywhere also. It's how am I influencing this conversation? How am I influencing the people that I'm around? How am I influencing this observation area that I'm sitting down to observe?
So it's part of the increased awareness overall then.
Yes, and we will influence.
Yeah, and we will. Sure we will.
And it's not that we are trying not to influence, but we're trying to be aware of how we're influencing as well as what are the other patterns around us.
Well, if someone were sort of curious about this practice, how do you get started?
Well, like I said, it's a seesaw between research and observation. So I would get started by going to a used bookstore and spending $100 on getting to know your natural neighbors. So buying a set of field guides. There are some great programs locally here to help us learn our neighbors. And the Jefferson Land Trust has put together what they call the Tideline to Timberland program through the Northwest Naturalist.
Yeah, and I took that a couple of years ago.
It's a great program. Heather Harding and Eric King Fisher are doing a great job, and there's a whole advisory board with Lorna Smith and Ken Wilson, and I sit in on that. It's great. It's a great group. There's a lot of great talent and minds putting that program together, so you should definitely look in on that one sooner than later because it fills up. If you know that you're the type of person that will create the excuse not to go and sit still while you have a big to-do list in your back pocket, then having a organized program to hold your hand through some of that is a great way.
It's a good starter then.
Yep. Their curriculum is a great seesaw back and forth between information and observation.
So do you take or do you advise taking field guides or notebooks with you to your sit spot, or do you leave that for afterwards?
I tend to leave that for afterwards, yes. I believe that the at-home processing of what you observed is where really a lot of the interesting tidbits percolate. We are inundated with information in this world, so it's not that we don't have enough information on the natural world, but we are losing our, as David Orr calls it, our eyes to acre ratio is dwindling right now. And so even though we might have more information about black bears in general than we've ever had on the planet, the amount of knowledge about what is the black bear on the Chimicum Ridge doing seasonally, we know very little about because we don't have folks going out observing.
Yeah. So. Wow, you know, I could talk with you, Scott, for just a really long time, but we're about to run out of time on our radio show. So to close this conversation, I have a quote, and it's from John Young. It's from his book, What the Robin Knows, which I completely enjoyed reading. And the quote is, "For the deepest learning and achievement to happen, the deepest visceral connection with the subject is necessary." I love that. I like that one. Now, we need to go and listen to those mystery sounds again. And remember, the question is, what are these birds communicating? So given what we've been talking about with Scott, it should be no surprise. The three species we've just heard were communicating with their own flock. Contact calls. And Scott, what do contact calls mean or say, or what are they?
They're a way of the birds keeping in contact with each other, just as we might wonder if, Nan, are you still out there in the garden shed?
Oh, it's sort of the, hi, hello, here I am, how are you?
Yeah.
That kind of just connection, rather than a song or an alarm or something. So that's what they were. They were all contact calls. The first species was a song sparrow, followed by a red-winged blackbird, and then finally an American goldfinch. So to close this program, let's have a quick look at what's coming up in the next few weeks. And Scott, will you help me share the upcoming events?
Of course. Well, it looks like the local chapter of Sierra Club is sponsoring a viewing of the film Sonic Sea, A World of Ocean Noise. The film shows how sonar, everyday vessel traffic, and drilling operations adversely impact marine life. The Sierra Club will be showing the short version of the film at their meeting on August 11th at 1 p.m. at the Port Townsend Library Conference Center.
And I've seen the long version of that film. It was really eye-opening. On Friday, August the 12th, go on a bat walk with Admiralty Audubon. Tom Butts, Port Townsend wildlife biologist specializing in bat ecology, will lead an evening bat walk at the Cotai Lagoon. He'll focus on interesting facts about the bats in our area. Then at dusk, he'll use bat detectors that can pick up the high-frequency calls to identify bats on the wing near the lagoon. Check the Admiralty Audubon website for details.
Friday, August 12th, join the Native Plant Society for a hike along the Switchback Trail from Hurricane Ridge to Klahani Ridge. Wildflowers should be at their peak, including some Olympic endemics. Check the Native Plant Society website for more details.
And of course, the Chum Salmon will be returning to Chemicum Creek this fall. Want to be a part of the team recording the return of the Chum to Chemicum Creek? Well, the North Olympic Salmon Coalition is holding their annual Chum Survey training on Thursday, August the 18th. No experience is necessary to join the survey team, but you should be physically able to walk the creek and over rough and slick terrain. You do need to register at the NOSC, that's North Olympic Salmon Coalition, website to take part in this opportunity.
Also on Thursday, August 18th, join the Natural History Society for a summer hike in Fort Flagler State Park on Marrowstone Island. There's a minus tide that morning, so be ready to explore the rocky, slippery intertidal zone. Look for details on the Jefferson Land Trust Natural History Society website.
So that's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live. Contact Nature Now hosts if you have comments, observations, or ideas, or even if you think you might be interested in joining our team of Nature Now hosts. Email us at naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at noon on Wednesdays, with repeats here on KPTZ, Thursdays at 5 p.m. and Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thanks for listening.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is Wildflowers, performed by Dolly Parton, Linda Ronstadt, and Emmylou Harris.
Wild, it can always survive. Wildflowers don't care where they grow. And the flowers I knew in the fields where I grew were content to be lost in the crowd. They were common and close. I had no room to grow, and I wanted so much to branch out. So I uprooted myself. just never belonged. I just long to be gone. So the garden one day set me free.